Welcome to the Shir Ramban, Parshas Mishpatim. Wanted to start tonight with a Ramban where he picks up on a theme that he actually had first introduced back in Parshas Shmos. The Pasuk says, Perachof Beis Pasuk Chof, V'ger lo sona v'lo sil chotzenu. Article translates, you should not taunt or oppress a stranger. Ki gerim hayistam be'eretz Mitzrayim, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. What's the connection between the prohibition and the explanation that's given? You shouldn't taunt strangers, because you were strangers in Egypt. So Rashi over here writes that im honito, if you are to oppress the stranger, afu yachol lahanos lahonoscho, so he can oppress you back. He can taunt you back. The lomar lacha, and he can say to you, af atem migerim basa, you're making fun of me because I'm a stranger. You also derive from strangers. You were strangers in Egypt. Mumshe becha al tamer lachaverecha. Rashi concludes a deficiency that you have, you know, some issue that you have. It certainly doesn't make sense to highlight that issue or that deficiency in somebody else. You know, somewhat along the equivalent of the English expression, people who live in glass homes shouldn't throw stones. Right? If you have something that's an issue with you, and you bring it out in somebody else, that's not going to be particularly helpful. So the Ramban quotes this interpretation from Rashi. He then quotes an interpretation from the Ibn Ezra, Rabbi Avram, Omar, Zachar ki gerim hayisem komohu. You should remember that, you know, just like this person is a stranger, you were also strangers, you know, so in other words, that should help you, remind you not to oppress the person. And says the Ramban, he doesn't think that either the explanations of Rashi or the Ibn Ezra are really getting at the heart of what's going on over here. The Ramban doesn't elaborate why he's dissatisfied with either Rashi or the Ibn Ezra's interpretation, but it could be that what's bothering the Ramban is the following. From a halachic standpoint, we understand this pasuk to be talking about a ger in the sense of somebody who converts, right? This is a convert, right? The ger lo sona v'lo sil chotzenu. You shouldn't oppress or taunt the convert. So, if that's the case, then the continuation of the pasuk is really hard to understand from the halachic perspective. Ki gerim hayistam be'eretz Mitzrayim, because you were converts in the land of Egypt. That's not true. Right, we were strangers in the land of Egypt. We were foreigners in the land of Egypt, but we weren't converts in the land of Egypt. That's not a true statement. So, if one interprets, you know, the first half of the pasuk the way Artskill translates it, you know, you shouldn't oppress or taunt a stranger. You're not supposed to make fun of strangers either. The way you're not supposed to make fun of anyone. But the halacha understands that what's being expressed in this pasuk is a unique and specific prohibition against causing distress to somebody who's a convert to Judaism. Now it happens to be, the Sefer Achinuch writes very, very famously that we can learn from this mitzvah the same way we're not supposed to oppress or, you know, make life difficult for somebody who converts. You know, by extension, it's also very important not to make life difficult for anyone who's a foreigner or a stranger, somebody who finds himself in a situation where, you know, he doesn't naturally blend in, you know, to the people around him. You know, the new kid in school, the new neighbors who moved in on the block, you know, people who are, you know, not from around here, foreigners and the like. So Sefer HaChinuch says, al derech ha-musar, you know, from an ethical perspective, when the Torah speaks about not oppressing a convert, we could extend that to anyone else who's not in their indigenous environment. But that's an extension of the pasuk, and to be honest, you know, it's not clear that, you know, the words of the Sefer HaChinuch are necessarily true in a strictly halachic sense, meaning if you oppress the new kid in school, again, nobody's suggesting that that's a good thing to do, but is there a specific iser in the Torah, you know, to not pick on the new kid who moved in any more so than there's an iser in the Torah not to pick on anybody else in the class? it doesn't seem that that's the case. And yet when it comes to somebody who's a convert, there is a very specific, unique issa, you know, not to make life difficult for somebody who converted. So once you understand that, the pasuk doesn't really read all that straight. You know, don't oppress the convert because you were geirim in Mitzrayim. You weren't converts in Mitzrayim. You were strangers in Mitzrayim. So neither Rashi's nor Ibn Ezra's interpretation, you know, something that's an issue with you, you shouldn't say to your friend, but it's not the same issue, right? And Ibn Ezra's statement that you understand where he's coming from because you were also geirim in Mitzrayim, again, it's not exactly true in the sense in which Chazal understand what the pasuk is talking about.
Are we positive that the usage of ger is mamash a ger, and not just a person who resides temporarily, a sojourner?
Right, so again, from
the people in your neighborhood.
Right, so from a halachic perspective, yeah, that is how we understand ger. In other words, v'ger lo son of lo sil chatzeno, on a halachic level, is meant to convey that, you know, somebody who is a convert. Well, you say mamashagir, I mean, it depends how you interpret that word, right?
If one is not supposed to be nasty to people who reside, who aren't the same faith, halachas kama kama, if you are the same faith, doesn't it make more sense? Isn't a bigger chiyuv be even nicer to him? Once you have a stranger, nice to strangers, aren't you supposed to be nice to your own?
Right, so again, from a halachic point of view, v'ger lo stono v'lo stil chatzenu is a specific iser to oppress a convert, someone who is he's supposed to be nice to everybody, but there's a specific prohibition above and beyond the prohibition, you know, to not be nasty to people in general, to especially go out of your way to be nice to a convert. So the Ramban
is telling us that because we were mistreated, Mitzrayim, therefore we should know.
Okay, so the Ramban develops the following idea, which I get, I'm sort of speculating as to what's bothering the Ramban, but we'll see that the Ramban's answer, you know, addresses this issue. V'nochon be'enai, it seems the correct interpretation in my eyes is as follows. Ki omar lo sone ger v'lo sil chatzenu, v'sach shavu, she'emo matzo miyodecha. Why would you be tempted to oppress the convert, says the Ramban? Because you say he has nobody to stick up for him. You know, he came in, came from a different faith, he came from a different culture, he's a loner, you know. So I would be tempted, you know, bullies always pick on people who don't have anyone to defend them. So I would be tempted, says the Ramban, you know, to perhaps, you know, give him a hard time because I think he's the underdog, no one's going to stick up for him. Don't do that, says the Ramban, interpreting the pasuk. You know the experience that you had in Egypt. What was the experience you had in Egypt? Hashem says, I saw how you, the Jewish people, were oppressed in Egypt. And I punished the Egyptians for oppressing you. The Egyptians oppressed you because they thought, who's going to stick up for the Jews? And you see that was a very, very wrong calculation on their part. So when you think to oppress someone who's a convert, thinking that, I can get away with it, who's going to stick up for him anyway? Know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to stick up for him the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stuck up for you. Ki ani roe dimas lo ashukim asher ein lohem menachem u'miyad oshkehem kolach. The Ramban quotes the pasuk in Koheles. I, Hashem, sees the tears of the oppressed and those who have no one to comfort them. I will be the one who comforts them, says Hashem. V'ani matzil kol adam bi'archazak mimenu. My modus operandi, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, is to save the oppressed from his oppressor. V'chein ha'amono v'hayasam losanu. That's what the pasuk then goes on to say. Don't oppress the widow and the orphan. Ki eshma sa'akosam. I'll hear their cry. All of these people, you know, the ger, the yasom, the almana, you know, these are people who don't have anyone else to rely upon. They can rely upon me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I will be there, I will have their back, even if nobody else does. A little bit later on in the Chumash will say, you know the soul of the ger, because you were geirim in Mitzrayim. Klomar, what does that mean? Yedatem ki kol ger nafsho shvala alav. You understand that anyone who comes from the outside, you know, is a little bit vulnerable. V'nenach v'tzoek. If he's hurt, he will cry out. V'enov tamid el Hashem. His eyes turn towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yirachim alav kashir richam aleichem. And Hashem will have pity on this person just as Hashem has pity on you. K'mo shekostuv. And here the Ramban references that which he wrote in Shmos. It says that the Klal Yisrael cried out from their labors. They cried to Hashem. They moaned from their labors. Their cries went up to Hashem from all of the work that they were experiencing. And says the Ramban, what's the intent of that pasuk? Kolomar, the pasuk means to say, lo bizchusam. The Jewish people really were not at a point where they deserved on their own merits to be taken out of Egypt. Right? The pasuk indicates that God took them out of Egypt. Why? They cried out to Hashem, and God said, you may not deserve to be saved fundamentally, but if someone is being oppressed and he cries out to Hashem, that person will be answered, even if, objectively speaking, the person may not have the merit to be answered. God hates oppression. And when God sees oppression, God responds. So that's the commonality. In other words, the word ger means something different in the two parts of the pasuk. The first part of the pasuk, ger, means the convert. The second part of the pasuk, ger, means the foreigner, a stranger. Okay, so then what's the analogy of the pasuk? The first part of the pasuk says, don't oppress the convert. Why? Because you were strangers in Egypt. Okay, but what's that? What's one got to do with the other? Says the Ramban, the point is, don't start up with someone who's vulnerable, because when you were vulnerable, Hashem had your back, even though you may not have fully deserved it. You see that Hashem is always on the side of the vulnerable, oppressed person, so don't you be the one doing the oppressing, because you'll see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to end up, you know, striking back at you, Rahmanul Islam, you know, when you start up with someone who is vulnerable and oppressed.
There are truths. I ask this question because I don't want to be disrespectful. Is there some misrepresentation, if that's the proper word, that we're referred as gerim? We were avadim, and the almana yosef v'ger, will see them in Parshas Re'eh and elsewhere, but it just seems to me, I appreciate the rabbi's distinction in the pasuk, but it just seems like a misrepresentation. We started out as gerim. We were invited guests, so to speak. As soon as Levi died, the shibud began. So it seems like the word avodim is missing. That I guess if I gerim, I mean it's very soft and very lovely and very compassionate.
Right.
Hashem's compassion was for avodim, not for gerim.
Right. So I think any interpretation of the pasuk, you know, has to take into account that the first half of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk are mirroring one another. Meaning, you know, the first half of the pasuk talks about a ger, the second half of the pasuk talks about gerim, and that's the whole parallelism. You know, why you're going to start off with the ger, but you yourself were gerim. Now, it's true that ger in the first half of the pasuk and gerim in the second half of the pasuk mean two different things. The common denominator is that, you know, you're both vulnerable, right? And that's really what the pasuk means according to the Ramban. Don't oppress the vulnerable, because at a certain point you were also vulnerable. But, you know, if you were to use the word avadim, you'd lose out on the comparison, because, you know, the comparison starts off by saying, you know, don't oppress the ger. Right? So that's this idea really harkens back to something that the Ramban said in Parashat Shmos. The Ramban already in Parashat Shmos made the point that Klal Yisrael only merited to go out of Egypt because they cried out to God from their suffering. Right? It was their heartfelt prayer that enabled the wheels of the redemption to be put into motion. Fundamentally speaking, says the Ramban, the Jews were really not on a level where they deserved to be taken out. But God hears the cry of the oppressed. You know, even if on a fundamental, objective level, you know, they're not on such a tremendous level of piety or the like. But that's what he said back in Parashas Shmos. When they cried out to God, God said, okay, they're being oppressed, they can't take it anymore, now it's time to react. And, you know, that the Ramban is following up with that theme over here in Parashas Mishpatim. Even if someone is perhaps not deserving in his own right, but when he becomes the object of oppression, God responds to that. You know, so you don't want to pick a fight with the underdog, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the back of the underdog. And that's really, the Ramban goes on in the next couple of psukim to really talk about that in the context of the Almana and the Yosam, the widow and the orphan, right? Don't start up with them either, says the next couple of psukim. Kol Almana v'yosam lo sa'anun. Don't start up with them. Im ani sa'ani yoso kim sok yitzak elai shamo eshman sa'akoso. If that widow, that orphan cries out to me, I will hear their cry, says Hashem. And the Ramban would add, I will hear their cry, even if they're not really deserving. But, you know, there's something about the person who's vulnerable and oppressed crying out to Hashem that sets the wheels of retribution in motion, and you don't want to be on the other side of that, you know, when that happens. That's the Ramban writes, you know, in this whole context over here. I wanted to start with a very important Ramban that's actually towards the end of the Sedra. And that Ramban pertains to a story that's told towards the end of the Sedra itself. In the beginning of Perakov Dalad, after all of the Mishpatim are presented, we have a section of the Chumash that begins, V'al Moshe Omar Alei El Hashem. To Moshe Hashem said, come up to Hashem, right? Come up to the top of the mountain, right? And what the Sukkim go on to describe how Moshe came to the people, told them all of the words that Hashem had shared with him, all of the Mishpatim, all of the rules. And after then, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down everything that Hashem had said. They entered into a covenant together with the people. They brought karbanos. Moshe Rabbeinu sprinkled the blood of the karbanos on the people. He read in their ears a Sefer HaBris, some kind of book of the covenant. And only afterwards, he went up, as the end of the Seder describes, to the top of Har Sinai. Pasuk Yudbeis, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Alei Elai Haharo, Ve'yesham, come up to me in the mountain, be there, Ve'etno Lecho Esluchos So'even, Hatzorah V'amitzvah Sher Kosavti L'Horosom, and I'm going to give you the tablets of stone with the Torah and the mitzvos, you know, everything upon that, and you'll teach that to the people. Rashi writes, in the very beginning of Perek Chof Dalud, Parsha Zo Nemra Kodem Aseres HaDibros. This whole last chapter of Parshas Mishpatim is really out of chronological order. It's really describing what happened prior to the giving of the Torah. B'dalid b'stivon ne'emar lo alei. In fact, this all takes place starting on the 4th of Sivan, right? 2 or 3 days, depending on how you calculate it, before Matan Torah, right? And everything that's being described over here, you know, the bris, the covenant, the sprinkling of the blood, the Sefer HaBris, the book of the covenant, these are all things that are taking place immediately prior to the giving of the Torah. And at the end of the Torah, at the end of the Sedra, when Hashem says to Moshe, okay, come up to Har Sinai, and I'll give you the Luchos, I'll give you the tablets, that's basically saying to him, come up to the top of the mountain, and we'll have the revelation of the Torah. That was the invite, you know, the evite, if you will, to the to Matan Torah, to the giving of the Torah. That's all what's being described here in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, an event that actually chronologically really belongs back in Parshas Yisro. The Ramban is not so happy with this interpretation of Rashi. We pointed out before, and we will probably point it out again, that the Ramban is a very big advocate of assuming that the Torah is in chronological order unless we have a very, very compelling reason to assume otherwise. Right? So, for instance, the Ramban back in last week's parasha, is very firmly of the opinion that Yisro came to visit the Jewish people prior to the giving of the Torah, even though there are sources that would indicate that he came later. The Ramban takes tremendous issue with the statement of Ibn Ezra that the rebellion described in the beginning of Korach took place back after the sin of the golden calf. He doesn't like that idea either. While it's true that Gemara in the beginning of Sachem tells us Ein muktam u'me'uchar b'Torah, that there isn't necessarily a chronological order in the Torah, the Ramban interprets that generally in a very, very narrow sense, meaning every once in a long while the Torah is not written in chronological order. But if you have no compelling reason to say that the Torah is not written in chronological order, the default assumption is that everything is in chronological order, right? Don't assume it's out of order until you really, really, really have no choice but to explain it in that way. The Ramban is very, very much a fan of, you know, the Torah is written in the chronological order in which things took place. And here too as well, he very, very strongly writes that what's being described over here is something that takes place after Matan Torah. And he writes in that vein that the when it says in Pasuk Gimel, Vayavo Moshe vayistafir la'am eis kol divrei Hashem v'eis kol ha-mishpatim, that Moshe Rabbeinu came to the people and he told them all of the words of Hashem and the mishpatim, the laws. The mishpatim are none other than the mishpatim which have just been elucidated in all of Parshas Mishpatim, right? In other words, basically the way the Ramban understands the flow of the psukim is that God revealed the Aseres HaDibros at Har Sinai, that's what we read about in last week's parasha, and then while Moshe Rabbeinu was still there at Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him the Mishpatim, right, Parshas Mishpatim, which is an elaboration on the Aseres HaDibros. The Ramban in the beginning of this week's parasha talks about how if you look into the Mishpatim in this week's parasha, they all build on the Aseres HaDibros in some way or another. Ve'eileh HaMishpatim, and these are the laws. And then after receiving the Aseres HaDibros and the Mishpatim, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the people, post-Matan Torah, and he teaches them the Mishpatim. What are the Mishpatim? Not just Mishpatim, you know, in a generic sense, not just laws in a general sense. He teaches them the laws that are in Parshas Mishpatim. Ki sikna evad ivri, you know, when you buy a Jewish slave, this is how it works. That's the Ramban writes. Otherwise, enenu nachon shiyye ala mishpatim shimstavu b'nei noach v'shenemru lahem b'mara. It doesn't make sense to say that the mishpatim being referred to are the mishpatim that they knew before they, you know, as b'nei noach, as pre-Jews, or the mishpatim that they received at Mara. We have a tradition that they got certain mitzvahs at Mara. It doesn't make sense to say, according says the Ramban, that that's the mishpatim, because the pasuk says vayisaper la'am, it's called divrei Hashem. He recounted to the people all of the words of Hashem and the mishpatim, and vayisaper, says the Ramban, implies that he's teaching something new which had not been revealed before. Otherwise, if this is pre-Matan Torah, you'd have to say that what he's talking to the people about by the mishpatim is just simply laws that they knew already. There's nothing new being introduced. So here it makes sense to say that what's happening over here is post-Matan Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu is revealing the laws to the people after the Torah itself is given. In fact, here, says the Ramban, Kvar heitiv liros Rebbe Avram Shapirei Sho'inim Kisidro. Somewhat interestingly, the Ramban takes issue with Rashi, but he says the Ibn Ezra got this one right. Because the Ibn Ezra understands that this parasha, beginning in Perichov Dalet, was indeed, you know, something that happened after the Torah itself was given. Again, more often than not, we find the Ramban, you know, agreeing with Rashi, arguing on the Ibn Ezra. Here it's flipped. And again, it's just an indication that as much as the Ramban from time to time, you know, argues with the Ibn Ezra and does so very strongly at times, but when he thinks the Ibn Ezra is right, he thinks the Ibn Ezra is right. You know, he doesn't shy away from agreeing with the Ibn Ezra either. The Amar ki adhena Sefer HaBris. And says the Ramban, quoting the Ibn Ezra, the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant, which is referred to in this chapter in Parashas Mishpatim, is that which basically comprises the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim up until this point. In other words, the Sefer HaBris essentially was Parshas Mishpatim, with all of the laws that were contained in Parshas Mishpatim. V'nei HaParshios Kulan Bos Kahogen. Really, all of the Parshios are presented in the proper chronological order. Ki achar matan Torah miyad bo bayom amar Hashem Moshe kos v'amaro b'nei Yisrael atem re'isem ki min ha-shamayim dibarti imochem. On the very day of Matan Torah, after the Torah was given, God turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and he said, you saw that I spoke to you from the heavens. The parashios, the paragraphs that are at the very end of last week's parasha, Parshas Yisro. V'hischil lachzor ulazir al avodah zorah losasun iti. And then, as related to the end of Parshas Yisro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reviewed some of the laws of avodah zorah. Losasun iti eloi chesed eloi zov. You shouldn't make gods of gold and gods of silver. V'tziva oso ve'elam mishpatim asher tosim lefneihem v'chol ha'mitzvos habos achareichem. And immediately on that day of Matan Torah, God taught Moshe Rabbeinu Parshas Mishpatim, which if you think about it is pretty incredible, because Parshas Mishpatim is basically the three Bavas. I mean, it's Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, more or less, right? So on the day of Matan Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave Moshe Rabbeinu a really high level shiur in about, you know, 300 blocks of Gemara, essentially, right? Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra. That's what Mishpatim basically is. The Hishlim, the end of Parshas Mishpatim talks about how the Jews have to eradicate Avodah Zarah from Eretz Yisrael. And then we begin the beginning of Perek Chof Dalet. Moshe tells the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe, I want you and Aaron to come up back to Hashem. Right? Because now that I've revealed these things to you, you have to go and tell them to the people, but after you do that, come back up to me, to Har Sinai, and I will give you the rest of the Torah, that which goes beyond Parshas Mishpatim. We pick up after Ma'ariv, Bezras Hashem, we'll continue how the Ramban understands this Parsha at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and again, we'll see a few novel things that emerge from that. Okay, welcome to the second half of the Shiur, Ramban and Parshas Mishpatim. The Ramban, at the beginning of Perek Chof Dalet, is in the process of disagreeing with Rashi. Rashi said that the whole story which is told in the beginning of the end of Mishpatim, from the beginning of Perek Chof Dalet, is really retrospective. It's really something that took place before Matan Torah. The Ramban strongly disagrees. He sides with the Ibn Ezra and understands that on the day of Matan Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu not only the Aseres HaDibros, but he taught him Parshas Mishpatim. Then Moshe Rabbeinu on that very same day came to the people, as described in Perek Chof Dalet, taught them Parshas Mishpatim, wrote out Parshas Mishpatim in a separate book, which is referred to in the story as the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant. And those were the Mishpatim that he taught to Klal Yisrael. So the Ramban continues in explaining the sequence of events. We're told that Moshe followed what God told him to do. Ubal Amachane, he came to the camp by Yisrael Omis Kol Divrei Hashem Kasher Tziva Oso Kol Somar B'nei Yisrael. He told the people everything that he was told to do by Hashem. What was he told to do by Hashem? So at the end of Parshas Yisro, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Kos Tomar B'nei Yisrael, Atem Re'isem, Kimin Hashemayim Dibarti Imochem. Right, go tell the Jewish people, you saw that I spoke to you from the heavens. And then he told them, Mishpatim, he told them this parasha, V'kiblu Akol B'Simcha. As is explicated in our parasha, they accepted everything joyously. Right, this is Pasuk Gimel. Vayan Kol Ha'om Kol Echad Vayomru, all of the people said at once, everything which Hashem said, i.e. these mishpatim, these additional laws. You know, we heard about these Ten Commandments, but now you're telling us all these additional laws? Na'aseh, we're going to do it. The atam, that is to say, kol advarim ha'elash ha'diber l'cho Hashem na'aseh, ki ma'aminu anachnu b'dvarecho. We believe that which you're telling us. In theory, the people could have said, look, you know, we got these Ten Commandments. We signed up for Ten Commandments. We didn't sign up for bava kama, bava mitzvah, bava basra. That wasn't part of the deal. They could have said that. Kol advarim asher diber Hashem na'aseh. According to the Ramban's interpretation, they say back to Moshe Rabbeinu, we're prepared to accept everything. Not only what you told us, the Aseres HaDibros, but Parashas Mishpatim as well, and we accept it b'simcha, and we believe that you're not making it up. We believe that you actually got all of this from Har Sinai. V'nei Moshe kostav v'yomahu b'sefer kol asher nitzavah. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down on that day, continues the Ramban, everything that he was commanded, chukim, mishpatim, v'toros, all of the laws he had gotten. He woke up the following morning. So in other words, we're already up to the day after Matan Torah, the following day, Isru Chag, if it were. And then they made a covenant on everything that they had received. So in other words, this whole story of Bona HaMizbeach, the whole story that's related here in Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, he built a Mizbeach, he built an altar at the foot of Har Sinai, right, that they brought karbonos, he sprinkled the blood on the people. All of that is taking place, according to the Ramban, on the day immediately after Matan Torah. Not prior to Matan Torah, as per Rashi, but immediately after Matan Torah. He took the book, which he had written the day before, which had Parshas Mishpatim in it, the crow ba'oznayim, he read it in their ears. The kiblu aleim od lavo b'brisimo, they accepted the covenant. For aru kol asher diber Hashem nasa v'nishma eilecha, everything that Hashem said nasa v'nishma. So that very famous pasuk, which appears here in Parshas Mishpatim, according to the Ramban's reading of the narrative, nasa v'nishma was said by the people after Matan Torah, and it's an acceptance not just of, you know, the what was revealed in Har Sinai, but what Moshe Rabbeinu was coming now and telling them, guess what? There's more. It's not just the Aseres HaDibros. It's everything that we have in Parshas Mishpatim as well. So it's interesting. Again, the translation of the words Nasa V'Nishma, as per the Ramban adds one important word that doesn't appear in the text. The people, according to the Ramban, say, Nasa, we will do whatever you said. V'nishma eilecha, we will listen to you, Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, Nasa v'nishma, according to the Ramban, is the people's expression of their belief that Moshe Rabbeinu is accurately conveying what Hashem told them. Because they're hearing, Nasa v'nishma is their response to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, there's more stuff where the Aseres HaDibros came from. After he finished with them, this day after Matan Torah, he had to fulfill what God had told him. Hashem had told him, you and Aaron should go up the mountain. And that's what it says later on in Pasuk Tes. They went up, and Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately goes up to Har Sinai and then spends the next 40 days on Har Sinai receiving and learning the rest of the Torah, as the Ramban goes on to say. Kol zeh mesukon umavuar, writes the Ramban. My interpretation that all of this is post-Matan Torah makes an awful lot of sense, right? And according to that, just to continue elaborating, when the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Yibbeis, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Alei Alei Ha'ara V'Yesham, go up to me in the mountain and be there. It means be there for 40 days. For Edna L'chos Luchos Ho'evan Atara HaMitzvah Shekosavki L'Orosom, at the end of those 40 days, I'll give you the Luchos to bring down, which is indeed what happens. The end of those 40 days, unfortunately, is Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with the Luchos, he sees the Egel, he breaks the Luchos, but in other words, the statement that the Luchos are going to be given is a follow-up to the day of Matan Torah, where there were no Luchos at that point. It was simply just a verbal expression of the Aseres HaDibros. Just want to mention one more interesting idea from the Ramban.
that's, you know, worth noting. Many ideas from the Ran are worth noting. All of them are worth noting, but one that I'm going to note at the present time. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu and these Zakenim go in the direction of Har Sinai, so it says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayochlu Vayishtu, they ate and they drank. And there's a major debate among the Mefarshim what is meant by the fact that they ate and they drank. Right. So Rashi, just to give one example, Rashi writes that they ate and they drank, and that's a bad thing. Hayu mistaklin bo belev gas mitoch achilo ushtia. They ate and they drank and they partied, and that was inappropriate for the incredible revelation which they were having at that time. Again, if you're having a revelation of God's glory, eating and drinking doesn't seem to be the appropriate response. The Targum gives a different twist on it. The Targum says that havul chavin bekarboneon des kabbalo berava ki ilu achlin v'shasan. Says the Targum, the Jewish people were so happy with their karbonos that had been accepted by Hashem that they were as happy as someone who was eating and drinking, meaning it's a metaphor. They weren't actually eating and drinking. They were so happy like they were eating and drinking. But the Ramban gives the third and entirely different explanation. Writes the Ramban, Sha'asu Simcha V'yomtov. The Zakenim made a yomtov. They made a simcha on the occasion of the receiving of the Torah. Kichein chovo lismoach the Kabbalah Satorah. Because that's what you're supposed to do. When you receive Torah, you're supposed to rejoice. And how do you express your joy? By eating and drinking. And the Ramban quotes the statement of Chazal in Shir HaShirim Rabbah that Osin Mishta L'Gmarot Shel Torah. Whenever there's a significant portion of Torah which has been completed, this is the source for our making a Siyum. Whenever there's a significant source of Torah which has been completed, we eat and drink, we make a party in order to celebrate it. So the first Siyum was that Maimon Har Sinai, according to the Ramban. In other words, they got the Torah. No bigger Siyum than that, you know. I mean, they had received the Torah itself, so it was totally appropriate. Not like Rashi. According to the Ramban, it was totally appropriate that they ate and drank to mark the occasion, because that's what the occasion demands, you know, to celebrate the reception of the Torah and not to let it go. Just interesting, the poskim note that there's an age-old custom to make a big kiddush on the day of Simchas Torah to celebrate the completion of the Torah. And some write, the Bikuri Yaakov, Yaakov Edlinger writes, that he's very upset that some people are not so careful with making this kiddush on Simchas Torah. He says people make kiddushim for all kinds of, you know, crazy reasons, but to make a kiddush for the Siyum HaTorah, that all of a sudden everybody says, nah, what do we need it for? You know, not so important. The Bikuri Yaakov, the Yaakov Edlinger says, no, you don't understand. That's the main reason we should be making a kiddush, you know, to celebrate the completion of Torah, you know, a major milestone in terms of the Limud HaTorah of Klal Yisrael. That's what really calls for a kiddush, and it's important not to be mazalzel, not to make light of that practice. Okay, we'll pick up next week. This is Hashem, Ruchanan ben Akasha Omer.